This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Panel to Screen, brought to you by TV Talk. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell, man, how you doing today?
I'm eternally deviant.
Hey, that's pretty good. Just think of that?
Yes.
All right. I like
off
it, man.
Top of my brain grapes.
Oh, man, that's right. We are talking about the Eternals, doing a movie review. Now, heads up, this is going to be a spoiler movie review. And I mean, we always do spoiler movie reviews and whatnot, but I think because this is actually coming out fairly close to the release of movies. I mean, as you know, here at TV Talk, Panel to Screen, we are a professional podcast. And that means that we bring content to you once it is, how you say, very late. But this time, we're ahead of the game. So we're getting some content out to you relatively quickly. So if you have not seen The Eternals and want to go in unspoiled, do not listen to this review. And I would argue that the movie is better if a lot of the plot points have not been spoiled for you, because a lot of what I feel like kind of came out about the movie was made public, and then they didn't really, like, the characters didn't catch up with the audience until about midway through. We'll talk about structuring anyway. But Eternals, spoiler warning, spoilers here, there'd be spoilers, and you've been warned. Bell, we're talking about Eternals now. Before we dive into it, you know, I always like to ask, what is your kind of knowledge of the Eternals prior to seeing this movie?
Zip. You know, a little bit about Zero and some zilch.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I feel like if you put like the Eternals artwork in front of me, I could pick it out as a Kirby. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. That's basically the extent of my knowledge, is that Jack Kirby and did the art for like Eternals and stuff, and
right,
created them and all that kind of stuff. So,
and that there's some kind of at least kind of back end inspiration where either the Eternals kind of feed into the old guy or the new gods, and the new gods feed into the Eternals. I cannot remember the story, so it's probably not worth sharing on a podcast, because those that know it are frustrated and they're trying to correct me right now, and those that don't are just getting misinformed. But regardless, as I understand it, one of the series, either the Eternals or the new gods, Kirby was working on, but then either Marvel or DC, depending on which storyline it was like, no more comics for you. So the other company was like, hey, we want that Kirby goodness over here. And then he went over there and wrote whatever it was. I want to say it was Eternals. I think he was writing Eternals at Marvel, and then he went to go do New Gods over at DC, but it could have been the other way around. Anyway, regardless, the Eternals. Yeah, my knowledge is fairly limited as well. Anything and everything I may have picked up along the way really came from them being announced in the MCU and me trying to play catch up. I was hyped for this movie, man. This is one really of the ones for the new franchise, or not new franchise, but phase four, that I want to say, let me think about this. I mean, outside of No Way Home, this might be the one that I've been the most hyped for.
See, that's interesting, because I was just kind of meh about this movie. I was like, I don't know anything about the Eternals. So I was excited about the fact that I didn't know anything about them. I didn't want to learn anything about them beforehand. I was way more excited about Shang-Chi and No Way Home, and, you know, the TV projects and stuff like that. Eternals, to me, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go see it, you know, but I'm not like, oh, dude, got to go see Eternals, bro. I already got the tattoo.
Right. Well, I mean, like, the caliber of the cast alone is something that, like, makes you kind of sit up in your seat. I mean, these are a lot of, like, bigger names that, you're like, oh, you put them in a Marvel movie? Okay, what's going on over here? And I mean, like a massive cast filled with like some pretty big heavy hitters, a cinematic spectacle bell, beautiful. I mean, the special effects in this movie, especially as they were kind of amping it up, I loved what I was seeing, like so many different power sets, and yet they were all using the same kind of color scheme, which I thought was a really great way to handle this kind of, you know, connection of all the characters and that sort of thing. And I mean, like, man, beautiful space odyssey-esque with you know, gods and planetary causes. You see where I'm going with this, Bell? We just talked about Dune. You see where I'm going with this, Bell?
Somebody just doesn't like space opera.
Oh man, I wanted to like this movie so much.
But you mentioned all the cast and all this kind of stuff, but you forgot the most important part of all of that.
What's up?
Jon Snow and Robb Stark are in a movie on screen together with a character named Cersei.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's Game of Thrones in space. Oh, it's Dune all over again. That's what I'm saying. So what is it about these Game of Thrones actors, man? All these Game of Thrones actors, you put them in these big budget, beautiful movies, and I'm like, this really needs to be a series. And I'll go ahead and tip the bean can again early on here, and I'm going to end up saying through at some point in my review, this really should have been a series, but keep going.
I don't know, man. Like, I didn't come across that at all.
You liked it.
I did. I enjoyed it. I liked it very much. Like it was one of those where I didn't have really any expectations going into it. I didn't know anything about the characters. People were laughing at the movie a lot on Twitter. And I thought I saw spoilers, but I apparently didn't. I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't going into the movie with any sort of pre-acquired comic knowledge that was going to spoil anything for me. Or, you know, make me think it should go one way when it didn't. And so whatever happened in the movie, I was kind of like, great, you know, this is my experience of it. It might not be someone else's who's way more familiar with the Eternals. But, you know, like I say, every time we review one of these movies, this is an MCU film that's adapted and based off the comics. Like you can't go into it thinking everything from the comics is going to happen in the movie and all that kind of stuff. But like I had zero comic knowledge, so I was just along for the ride, you know.
Let me focus on what I liked about this movie, because there's a lot. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed this much more than Dune. I'm just making the comparison because obviously it was the last movie that we reviewed and we were on different sides of the aisle on that one, and we're going to find ourselves, I think, there again. And also, you know, there's a lot that I think this movie did well that Dune didn't do well. And part of it was this was much more entertaining, like especially certain characters really shine. Nanjiani's character in particular was great.
Yeah, Kingo is king.
Yes, Kingo is king. Love it. Like would have loved way more time with him. And that's, you know, I think there's a lot of these characters that I really would have enjoyed a lot more time with as well. Paperboy. His character's name is
Paperboy.
Oh, you don't watch Atlanta. Brian Tyree Henry. Festos.
Oh, yeah. Festos. Yeah.
Yeah. His character was great. For like the 2 seconds he was in this movie, like there was a lot of like really, really
like 8 seconds. There's like an entire 10-minute scene with
in a 3-hour movie. You're right. There's an entire 10-minute scene that he gets to shine.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I thought he was fantastic in this. I thought Robb Stark actually played a really good Superman in this movie. I thought he did a really good job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously we've already given the warning. You know, I know that there's kind of the homage to Icarus flying into the sun. The implication, of course, is he can't live with himself or something like that. But there's also possibly, you know, I'd like to see him come back as perhaps even like this universe's century, essentially.
No, he ain't going to be in Eternals too.
No, but I think that he could actually come back in a pretty. You think that he's dead?
Yes.
Okay. It's possible.
I mean,
that's what was implied for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, like nobody, man, if it's nobody in an MCU film.
let me ask you this. You try to throw something into the sun and then find a body.
Well, so that's
reduced to its constituent atoms.
Did we ever actually see him like break? You know what I mean? Like he seemed very unbreakable, whereas the rest of the Eternals did get kind of sliced up a bit when they were fighting the Deviants. Icarus was, I mean, again, he was kind of the Man of Steel. He had that whole, you know, thing going for him.
I want to say he was healed in the beginning. by
Ajax. I think you might be right there. That's a good point. Although I will also point out that the idea here is that the Celestials create suns, and obviously the Eternals are kind of connected to celestial power. So there's, I'm just saying, there's an avenue to bring him back, and I think he could actually facilitate a very interesting role if he came back like with his memory wiped or something like that and became Sentry. I just think there's, you know, in an MCU kind of twist of the narrative, they could do that. And I thought he did a good job. But yeah, so I mean, like they did a fantastic job. I think Cersei was a standout character. Obviously she's kind of our primary lead in a very, very, very crowded movie. And I thought that she, you know, wore that very well. I thought the action was good. I liked the action. Jon Snow was fine for 2 seconds. That was cool. I'm trying to think of what else I like. The humor, again, like really, it comes down to Kingo and Festos as being kind of like, in my mind, like they were kind of our they were the fun, right? Like they brought a sense of kind of connection, I think, to this movie, and probably because they're the most engrossed in humanity. So we're able to connect with them. Obviously Fastos has more of like the emotional connection with his family. Kingo has much more of like a media connection, kind of like a geek vibe that we can all kind of associate with and connect with his love of Bollywood, or actually just kind of embodying Bollywood. Oh, I loved, the speedster. Makkari. I loved Makkari, yeah, man. Yeah, like her power set was awesome. When she went in on Icarus and everything, that was just brutal. That was incredible.
Good representation of on-screen super speed, I thought.
Big time. Excellent, Flash versus Superman moment. In fact, actually, the, you know, Flash and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman teaming up against Superman was pretty awesome. That was a great sequence as a whole. Basically, this is the Justice League. This is Marvel's Justice League. And they're not really trying to hide it with all the Batman and Superman references throughout, you know?
Well, so that was interesting, right? Because, you know, in a world where like Captain America, Iron Man, and like all these people exist, for Festus's kid to be like, "You're Superman." I'm like, bro, like you have real super, like, because I'm imagining that right. in the MCU, Superman is a comic book character.
Right.
And, but it's like, you know, you have Vision. You know, that would be a way more apt description. A guy who shoots yellow beams out of his head and flies.
Yeah.
And a guy who shoots yellow beams out of his eyes and flies.
Yeah. No, I mean, but I like it, though. I kind of like the nods here and there. I think that's really good. And I mean, I think it's just, if you didn't address it in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's pretty clear who he is, you know, modeled after. Yeah.
Right. But in all actuality, you know, aside from the way in which these characters kind of model and their power sets and kind of how they all interact there, when it comes to the family dynamic, really, they're kind of the Umbrella Academy. You know what I mean?
They certainly have a lot of those personality quirks with one another. Like, you know, there are some who get along better than others, and definitely, like, you know, have family fighty moments over what mom wants them to do.
Those were the best parts, in my opinion. Like, yeah, that was like when they were all together. Like, there was a lot in this movie of getting the band back together, but then skipping back to a time when they were together, but then skipping back to them getting the band back together. And I think that, anyway, the parts where they were together, like when there was that family dynamic on display, those were the best parts of the movie for me.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, like, it was enjoyable for sure. Like that, and that's one thing that I really liked about the movie, is that each of the characters were independent and different from other heroes that we've seen in the Marvel movies. And like, I thought that was, because like I everybody who asked me, you know, what I think about the movie, I was like, I enjoyed it. You know, my spoiler free review is that I enjoyed it and it subverted my expectations in a pleasant way.
Oh, that's really good. My you want to know what my spoiler? Well, I can't actually share what my spoiler. I don't have a spoiler for your review.
Yeah. your spoiler for your review is I hate space opera and I shouldn't have to read.
No. I mean, like, again, because like, look, my critique of Dune was this should have been a series, and honestly, that's my main critique here. This should have been a 2-part movie, or really, what I would have enjoyed far more is a series. I think they should have done what Umbrella Academy did and kind of break up these characters and give us kind of like a deep dive into who they are personally before bringing them all together. Because beyond beyond that, like, it was very difficult to care. Like, this, that was kind of my main connection point with Dune, was it's difficult to care about some of these characters. And here, other than Cersei, we really don't get enough time to really dive deep. We see how they care for each other, and that's helpful. That's certainly helpful. And it's not as bad as Dune, I'll say that. But there's a lot that tell and not enough show. I'll give you a great example. Sprite as a kid, right? Like, we hear, she tells us about how frustrated she is living as an old person in a kid's body. And we see, and, you know, we do see how that, like, how she's emotional about that, but it, like how she's, like, you know, kind of breaking down a little bit under that, you know, eons of existence or thousands of years of existence like that. But at the same time, wouldn't it have been much more amazing to, like, spend an hour of a day in the life of an old, you know, kind of this old person who's stuck in this child's body, you know, like, that would have, go ahead. I mean,
did you miss the scene in the bar at the beginning where she had to, like, mysticize herself as an adult and then had to, like, bail? And
yeah, but I mean, like, that could easily be kind of interpreted as, like, you know, some, like, lame-o is trying to pick her up in the bar and then haha is just a kid. Like, there wasn't, like, yes, I saw the one scene, and I think that's my biggest criticism, man. We got 10 characters here and they each get one little scene throughout, and I don't think that does the characters justice. I think that the characters need more time for us to be able to spend with them. If you had broken this down to, like, you know, again, a two-parter and give five of these characters a movie and then the other five a movie, and then maybe, like, a three-parter where they actually come through and, you know, face off with, you know, the judge with Ashanti. What was the judge?
Oh gosh. Arishem, right?
Arishem. I think Arishem, the judge, is actually the name, the full name in the comics. So,
oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Hence the whole, I will come back and I will judge, you
know? Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I think that could have been done. As I'm watching it, man, I remember, like, the first 10, 15 minutes and I'm watching this movie and I'm like, I cannot believe that this movie is tracking lower than, you know, Thor: The Dark World. This is not nearly as bad as Thor: The Dark World. And then as I'm watching, I'm starting to do the repair job in my mind. I'm like, how could this movie be better? I feel like this movie could be better. And that's not what you want in a Marvel movie. You want to be swept away. You want to go on one of those roller coaster rides. You want to be engrossed in the world. But for me, man, I kept on, like, trying to fix it in my head because I was just having such a hard time. Like, every single time I cared about a character, they, like, jumped through time and it was hard to, like, attach to where they were now and how they were engaging. And I wanted to spend more time with the characters, but I was upset because we weren't doing that. We didn't get a chance to know the speedster. We didn't get a chance to really know Ajax. We didn't really get a chance to know, not Genghis Khan, Gilgamesh. We didn't get a chance to know Gilgamesh, you know, like.
I disagree. I will say that the most underdeveloped character was probably Makari.
Yes, very much so.
Have a lot of screen time. The stuff that we did see was basically, you know, examples of her power. And then the only real character aspect we got, there's a little bit of her and Droog.
Droog. Discount Ezra Miller? Yes.
What do you mean? I figured he would be, like, you know, the you know, name brand Ezra Miller because you don't like Ezra Miller. Well,
I mean, given, anyway.
Yeah. No, look, nobody was choked on the set of this film, all right? So
no, exactly. I'm not even making the joke because he's not Ezra Miller. I'm just saying he does kind of resemble Ezra Miller, right?
Not in the slightest.
Yeah, he kind of resembles Ezra Miller.
I would say that Timothy Chalamet more resembles Ezra Miller.
Regardless, though, Druig, again, another character that I feel like we would have really benefited from doing a deeper dive into who he is. Like, you know, someone who was, you know, a character who took great offense to being controlled by this god, goes off and forms a cult where he's controlling everyone around him. He then becomes, like, this new god doing the exact same thing, just with a different philosophy. And I think that, like, that's a cool concept. Would love that expanded upon, but we don't really get that expanded upon. We just get kind of the concept. And I feel like that's the problem of this movie, is you've got 10 characters with 10 different stories and arcs, most of which have really cool kind of concepts wrapped around them that we never really get a chance to fully explore. And I think that's to the detriment of the characters. And it's certainly to the detriment of us as an audience, because these are all very likable characters. You know what I mean? Like, for the most part. I mean, again, Druig is a little bit more of a, you know, but otherwise, like, everybody else is like a very likable with some form of relatability or potential relatability had we kind of dug into them more. And it's clear they all care for each other, but I would argue they probably did not do a good enough job making us care for them. Let me tell one last thing though. I got to make mention of this, because in terms of like things I loved about this movie, because there were some things I loved about this movie.
Okay.
And one is the fact that that it was like a philosophical debate.
Yes. Yes.
Like the action was awesome, but the fact that it really kind of came down to a philosophical debate was fantastic. I loved that.
Yeah. And that was another thing about the subversion of expectations that I loved, right? It was that Icarus knew the plan all along, and Ajak also knew the plan all along and decided, you know what? Like, I don't know if these people are worth sacrificing. And like the fact that all the characters had their own, they came to their own conclusions, right? Like, we know what Captain America would do in that situation. We know what the other heroes would, right?
Right.
But like, to have Icarus and Kingo and Sprite all be like, no, we got to stick to the plan. Like, I mean, you can see their motivations, right? Like, you know, their motivations there. And it was so neat to have them each kind of have a different reaction to it. And I thought that was super cool. Like, Kingo being like, look, I agree with Icarus, but like, I'm not going to fight you because you're my
favorite. That was great. Yes.
So good. Yes. So good. And so different, right? Like,
yes, yes.
I love that bit of it. I thought it was really, really cool, and something that we just haven't seen before in a Marvel movie, which I also really appreciated.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. I really enjoyed that too. Again, I think that had the storytelling in my mind been given more time, like, because this needs to be a very character-driven story. And I think, unfortunately, it wasn't beyond like one or two characters, especially given the fact that like really the billing is about this massive team. Like the big emphasis about this movie is like all of these different characters. We've got like a diverse cast of like extreme, like Hollywood royalty. Like, this is, you know, like, this is the big selling point for this movie. And yet it really kind of boiled down to like two or three characters getting a chance to kind of, you know, have a legitimate arc. Everybody else had these like wedged in arcs, these really, really like compact arcs and that sort of thing. Would have loved more time with them. Here's the other thing. Love the fact that it was a philosophical debate. Probably my biggest problem more than anything else with this movie comes down to this. I don't know. So I'm not on Twitter. So I don't know if like Twitter's figured this out yet. I'm sure they have. I'm sure I'm not the first person to point this out. Okay. I'm sure I'm not, but I'm going to go here. Bell.
Yes.
Okay. So the Eternals, the most powerful, like connected to godlike power that existed before the Infinity Stones, right?
Yeah.
Like angelic, kind of lower tier gods themselves to some extent, right?
Yeah.
Their big plan comes down to one thing that they need to do and fail at, right?
Yes.
They need to put a celestial to sleep, right?
Yeah.
That's what they need to do.
Well, I mean, that's the initial goal was to put it to sleep.
The initial goal is to put it to sleep. That's the goal. That's what they're trying to do. Okay. Bell, do you know where I'm going with this?
They kill it instead.
Nope, not that. They kill it because they fail at their first mission of putting a celestial to sleep. Bell, they could have called the Guardians of the Galaxy and they wouldn't have even needed the whole team. They just need Mantis. Mantis's only skill, like her one power is putting a celestial to sleep.
Well, but like,
that was her job. Like, Ego is literally a celestial. He is the same thing that is hatching out of the earth, and the same thing as a Shanti, the Judgment, redhead, dead redemption in the sky. I'm saying, like, Ego is the exact same thing. He is a celestial, and nobody calls Mantis the Bug Girl.
Yeah, but
the Bug Girl is more powerful than the Eternal. I just wanted to, like, is anybody else talk, like, I'm not on social media and nobody's trying to spoil the movie. I get that. But like, is anybody with me on this? Did nobody else sit there? Like, you know, you think about like phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Everybody's like, oh, why don't they call the Avengers? I'm like, no, legit. Why don't they call Mantis? They need
the
Bug Girl.
Mantis was.
Yeah, but point is that like we're supposed to like believe that like there are these like big godlike, it's like, oh, cosmic energy. I'm like, yeah, the bug girl's more strong than you. Like literally it takes 10 of you to fail at this, or four or five or however many were connected to the hive mind at that point. But y'all all try, and with all your powers combined, you got nothing. And you could call Bug Girl from the Guardians of the Galaxy, and she could come and lickety split this thing in like 2 seconds. She did in the first 10, 15 minutes of Guardians 2 what it took them 3 hours to fail at. So I'm sorry, man.
She couldn't even put Thanos to sleep.
That was different. Thanos actually was like pulling into the, he had the Infinity Gauntlet on at that time. So he's literally pulling from like the powers of creation and yada, yada. I have a feeling, by the way, that that whole text that we saw at the beginning, most of this movie is around the concept of like religious orders lying to their subservience. You know what I mean? And so I have a feeling that what we saw was not history, but like the history as told by the Celestials. I don't think the Celestials actually, I don't think they're that powerful, honestly, based on this movie.
What, like, what do you mean?
Based on this movie, like if the Eternals are like, they're, you know, they're Silver Surfers. What was the Silver Surfer? He was the
Herald.
Yeah. If like, that's the idea, is that we're like dealing with the heralds of the Celestials through the Eternals. And I'm like, I mean, Bug Girl's more powerful. Like, no, I'm sorry.
I mean, could there not be like different tiers of Celestials?
Yeah, I mean, I think there definitely are, right? You got the Prime, and I think, you know, we got, you know, at the end of the movie, we got Star Fox showing up and being like, hey, I'm going to be in this franchise too. And I'm like, cool, Star Fox. I feel like you'd fit better in the Guardian. But okay, you can come over here. Like, I don't know. That was one thing that I just kept on thinking the entire time. Like, as soon as they had the plan of like putting it to sleep, I was like, oh, like Mantis did. Like, literally, that's what she did in the first like 15 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, is she put a Celestial to sleep. The Bug Girl.
Like, I feel like it's different. I feel like in that
situation, it is literally the same thing, Bell.
No, it's not. No,
yes, it is.
That was more of a thing where Ego needed her to put him to sleep. So he wanted to go to sleep, and she facilitated that.
Uh huh.
Right.
This thing isn't like it doesn't even have the will to fight back at this point.
Yeah, but I think it's different. I would say that it's different.
That's another thing, actually, that kind of bothered. You know what? Actually, let's jump to a break real quick. We're going to get back. We're going to be diving into all this, you know, and I'm going to give Bell his due. I know. I'm talking over Bell. Bell needs to he needs to defend this movie more. That's going to happen. We'll be right back with you. More great TV talk up in just a few minutes. But first, we got to pay a few bills. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, man. All right. So I need to give you your dues. All right. Hit me. But prove me wrong.
So, well, first off, I just want to say that, like, another thing that I liked about this movie is that there weren't all these things. Like, I didn't go in there and say, oh, they should have called Mantis, or like, where are the Avengers for this? And like, how come that? Because like, I thought it was neat that it was a Marvel property in the MCU, but like, it didn't feel like every other Marvel movie where, you know, everything has to tie into everything. Like, I felt like it was a good standalone story in that universe. And like, I like the fact that, you know, I didn't have to go and, well, like, how come they didn't call this guy, or why didn't they do that? But like, the whole Mantis thing makes sense to me, because they've been on Earth for 7,000 years. They don't know who the hell the Guardians of the Galaxy are. Like that. Like,
yeah, no, don't be wrong. My argument is less that I'm kind of joking when I say they should have called Mantis. It's really more pointing out the power disparity here, is that we're told that they're so powerful, and yet Bug Girl did it in the first 10 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, but like, Druid wasn't built to manipulate the minds of Celestials. It was built to manipulate the minds of humans.
Yeah, fair point. But again, all the, like, again, this is just proving my point that, like, so they're not as powerful as we've been led to believe.
They're not as powerful as each other.
Yeah.
Like, Icarus is clearly stronger. Like, so look, there is a distinct difference between the set of Eternals, right? You have your combat Eternals, and then you have your like facilitator Eternals.
Yeah, strategy, like, more like cerebral. Yeah.
Yeah, like Phastos, you know, he's an inventor and stuff like that. He helps humans along technologically and things like that.
It's Phastos, right? Like it's like a like Hephaestus.
Yeah, Phastos. Yeah, like Hephaestus, that would make sense. Kind of like, you know, Athena is Athena, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but like, you know, you have Gilgamesh, who is obviously probably, you know, the basis of Gilgamesh, the Babylonian hero.
Right.
And he's super strong, right? Like he can beat stuff up. Icarus is like, you know, he flies around, shoots laser beams out of his eyes. You had like Circe, who the extent of her powers was like changing one thing into another, not really a combat power, although she does manage to kill a deviant with that power, but she's never done that before. Yeah. Athena, clearly, you know, the best fighter, right? Makari, another fighter aspect. But like, you know, you had Sprite, who was there to sort of like, you know, she can project illusions and things like that. Not really a combat thing. It's more of a like, you know, we have these fighters who are there to fight the deviants, and then we have the support crew who is there to like foster whatever race they're trying to build up so that they can populate the planet enough so that the celestial can consume them, right? So like, yeah, like it, that doesn't surprise me in the least. Like Droog was there to like, you know, control human minds, and that was kind of what he was there for. Like it's going way out of his bounds to try and put a celestial to sleep.
All right. But, I mean, that's fine. But I mean, come on, man. You know, I'm just saying Mantis could have done it. not even like the coolest guardian could have knocked this out. Anyways.
But yeah, I feel like the sleep plan probably wasn't going to be the best because the thing's going to wake up eventually, you know. I don't know. But it's kind of weird that they killed it. Like I wasn't really expecting that.
Well, my mindset was, and I think this is probably where they were going. I can't remember if they said it specifically, but my understanding was like, let's put it to sleep, then get Phaestus to like, you know, figure out some sort of like C-section option here. Like, let's like,
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I think they probably could have done it. Like, you know, I think there was a path to victory here. It just involved Mantis. Okay. So that's the one thing. I as soon as I got out of the theater, I started texting people like, have you seen it yet? And then like anybody that said yes, I didn't do it to you because I wanted to save it for the podcast, but everybody else I was messaging and I was like just sending them gifts of Mantis being like, huh? literally it's what she does in the first 10 minutes. I just can't get over that. And that's the thing, I love that you love this movie for not digging too deep into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. My argument, though, my pushback on that is that this movie tries to establish itself as very quintessential to the Marvel Cinematic Universe without really paying homage appropriately. For example, we're all dealing with Celestials. Well, we've dealt with Celestials before. We've actually seen two, one alive, one dead. We've seen Ego, who was a Celestial, but we got no reference to Ego in this. And I hope if they're going to like, I hope in like the Eternals 2, we'll kind of start connecting some pieces here, because not only was Ego in a Celestial, but nowhere from Guardians of the Galaxy as well, like was the skull or is the skull of a fallen Celestial. So a couple of things here. For one thing, we've seen that Celestials are very killable, right? Which kind of hurts the Eternals to some extent, at least us as a knowledgeable audience, because the Eternals don't know this. But we know this because they are kind of they're in the cult of the Celestial, and
they know it now. They killed one.
Well, exactly. But before this, I guess before that whole experience, they didn't quite know this, but we know this. So like, you know, yes, it's very beautiful and, you know, seismic to see the head of Ashanti, Ashayer,
Arishem.
It's really, and you know, like, you know, the way in which they kind of showed Arishem, you know, kind of popping up and everything was, you know, majestic and, you know, meant to be kind of this menacing presence and everything, and just so massive and so huge. But we as an audience, at least as a knowledgeable audience, this won't hit everybody, but we know like, okay, but like, you know, Rocket and Groot blew one of those things up, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like Bug Lady put it to sleep.
Wait, Rocket, who did Rocket and Groot blow up?
They blew up Ego. They put a bomb in his brain.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, like I was saying,
he's a different Celestial. Like this is, there's got to be like different types of Celestials, right?
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know. I mean, like he wasn't wearing his armor. That's true. So, I mean, you got Kurt Russell, right? Like, but we only see him as Kurt Russell because that's what he's projecting out. Like, his actual form is the planet, which was awesome. Like, one of the best moments in that movie is when they pull back and you actually see Ego, like, from space and is, like, face forming with the, you know, the storms kind of amassing over the planet and everything else. And so you see kind of the full power of Ego. Ego is one of the, up until, I guess, this movie, was really one of the biggest, you know, powerhouses. Well, I guess up until Thanos with full Infinity Gauntlet was one of the biggest powerhouses that anybody's ever faced. And so I find it odd they didn't even reference Ego, or we didn't even kind of dive into that. I would have enjoyed that a little bit more, kind of those connection points to what's come before.
So that was the only connection point that I feel was lacking, is because since the Eternals are completely based on Earth, like, they wouldn't have this connection to this, you know, cosmic realm of the MCU with the Guardians, with Ego. Well, with the exception of Ego, right? Because Ego placed that placed the flower on Earth, and the, you know, tried to, like, you know, turn Earth into Ego. And, you know, that failed when the Guardians killed him. So you figure the Eternals would know something about that, and that would maybe tie into their goal.
Right.
Because
almost like he would be a rogue Celestial from that standpoint, right?
Well, he might not have known that that was a planet with like a Celestial egg, you know. That's one, you know, I have to think that there's either different types of Celestials, and the giant six-eyed things that we saw are in a different class of Celestial than, say, Ego. Because, you know, Ego wasn't trying to create new Celestials. He was trying to turn everything into himself.
Right, exactly. Which to me seems like he would be an enemy of his fellow Celestials from that standpoint.
Yeah, or you know, some you know, unknown entity to them or something.
But he's one of them. They seemed very interested in their own kinds.
Well, then, yeah, like, so that, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but, like, that didn't bother me in the movie. I didn't really care about that per se, because, you know, everything was focused on Earth, and Ego was stopped on Earth by the Guardians on Ego while they were fighting Ego on himself. Yeah, whatever.
right. Yeah.
But that didn't really bother me, because it didn't impact the story in a way that I felt was meaningful. The deviants were the reason why they were there. The deviants are there to, like, you know, kill off the apex predators so that, you know, intelligent life can come up. Maybe it should have been touched on. Maybe there should have been something that they could have said. But, like, overall, that didn't really bother me, again, because, you know, I didn't really mind that there weren't a lot of hooks to the other.
Yeah,
the rest of the MCU in here.
Don't get me wrong, because I agree with you to an extent. Like, I too enjoy movies that can kind of exist on their own without having to have all these hooks. That being said, because this movie intentionally is trying to, like, assert itself as a pretty substantial hook for the rest of the universe, I feel like doing so without paying homage to what's come before is a little, I don't know, it's a little breaking for me. It's not necessary. I get it. If we're talking about from the Eternals perspective, they have no concept of Ego or Nowhere or whatever else. They don't have any memories before Earth, and they've been stuck here, and they've just kind of do whatever Arishem tells them. So, like, it's fine. I did. And then there were some kind of disappointments that I kind of brought with me. Like, one is I was really, really hoping that we were getting some sort of setup with Galactus. Just the imagery and everything else seems as though they're going to try to tie Galactus into the Celestials in some form or fashion.
I came out of the film thinking exactly that.
You think so?
When Arishem comes back, takes them, and he's going to, like, you know, read their memories. And I think the judgment that he's talking about is sending Galactus to consume the planet.
Interesting. So I figured that he, like, you know, that Arishem would actually come back to judge the planet. I didn't think that they would actually send Galactus specifically.
Well, you know, he's a judge. He's not Judge Jury Execution. He's not Judge Dredd, okay?
He's not Judge Dredd.
You know, perhaps in the MCU...
Is he Galactus, Judge Judy?
Isn't it like Justice Judy now? Didn't they reboot it?
What about Judge Mathis? Or Judge... what was another
Clarence
one?
Clarence Thomas.
Judge Clarence Thomas. Wait, no, what was the other... There was like three judges back-to-back back in the 90s.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mentioned the Supreme Court justice. So.
I know. I got. Yeah. Anyway, yes.
But so like that was my big takeaway. Okay, that, you know, Arishem's the judge, and he's gonna go and he's gonna, you know, find Earth wanting. But, you know, it's not his job to deal out judgment, to met judgment, right? Like that's another Celestial's job, and that Celestial being Galactus.
Right.
And so then we're going to see a Silver Surfer come down as a herald and be like, hey, look, sorry, your planet's, you know,
it's been judged.
Yeah, it's been judged and found wanting. And so now, you know, my homie Galactus is going to come. And then all of a sudden, the stretchy right. guy and an invisible lady and a rock dude and a fire guy are going to be like, nah.
Right, 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 right.
And
but then again, can anybody call Manta?
I'm telling you. I don't need to have that explained. I don't care.
No, like, you're right. And it was different. He was willingly going to sleep. And actually, when she tries to put him to sleep, she was successful, but it was difficult for her to hold it.
When he didn't want to go to sleep. Exactly my point. So like,
but she still was able to do it. She was still able to do it. Give her some of that eternal power and she wouldn't, you know, a little bit of a power boost.
Can she form a uni mind with the Guardians?
A uni mind with the Guardians. The Guardians did. That's what they did in the first movie, actually. So yes, you know what? Yes.
Was Mantis a part of the first movie? Absolutely not. Is the Power Stone a thing that they can all grab onto and distribute the power anymore? No, it's not. It's gone. No,
you're right.
Gone.
Oh man. All right. You're right. The Deviants. I was a little disappointed there as well. None of the villains. I mean, I know that Icarus was kind of our pseudo villain, pseudo not villain. And I get that part of this movie was it was less about good and evil and really more about philosophic questions. I dug that. But they still presented the Deviants as a kind of a villainous presence. But at the same time, it's not like we really connected with them. They kind of fall into that phase two era villain in the MCU, like, you know, the Dark Elves or something like that. Malekith.
So that was my one disappointment with the movie. I will say was the Deviants, because by the time that we got Crow to be like, you know, have a conscience or whatever, and he starts talking and he starts explaining to them how, like, you know, our people have been genocided and whatnot. And I was like, yeah, you eat people and stuff. But like, now that you have a conscience, okay, well, maybe then you can, you know, evolve your people to not do that. And we won't have to kill you anymore. And I was more interested in what he had to say, but he never got to say any of it because he got cut into very many pieces by Athena.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so that was a disappointment for me. Like the Deviants were, you know, a threat and then they became more than a threat. And when they became more than a threat, that's when I was like, okay, now this is interesting. Now we have there are more philosophical questions for us to contemplate here, right? So now that they have this consciousness, how is killing them different from
right.
killing
exactly.
humans?
Exactly.
And but we didn't touch on that. We didn't go into that. We didn't have any sort of explanation of that. And that was kind of the thing I didn't like about the movie.
They're very Zerg. I got a lot of Zerg vibes from them. From StarCraft? StarCraft?
Yeah, kind of.
Because they were constantly like changing and evolving, and like they would kill something and then take on like its properties.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of reminded me of StarCraft 2 there. But, you know, I'm with you on that. I also felt it was disappointing at the end that they didn't team up with the Deviants to take down Icarus. That would have made a lot more sense with the kind of the message that I feel like the movie was taking. And so I think not going that route and kind of like giving like, oh, well, here's just another, you know, bad guy. So we can kind of split up the fight a little bit. I thought that was a little disappointing.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's some more there that didn't really make it into the movie.
It was a long movie. It was a big one, man.
Yeah. Like I thought there would be some kind of team up or, something where they come to some sort of agreement where it's like, all right, you know, now that we see the value of consciousness, we're going to stop killing people. And we don't want the planet to destroy because we have just, you know, been elevated to this level of consciousness. And so we'll help you stop Icarus. And then we want you to stop killing us. And so we're going to leave and go do our own thing out in space. You know, Festus can make us a new ship and we'll go out somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, for me, man, I think overall for the movie itself, we're about to talk about these end credit scenes, but I feel like this had so much potential. I really wanted to love this movie, but I feel like this should have been a series. And maybe it's just because the caliber of these Disney Plus series has been so good that like when you see kind of the movies and it's like, was this necessary? Like Shang-Chi was necessary. Like that's a good, that was a good movie. It was tight. There were some, you know, some decisions made in the third act that I wasn't exactly proud, like, or exactly
kaiju fight. About.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, it's a decision, it's fine. But like that was a good movie. That was like good for a movie. That was a story that was meant for a movie. And then, you know, Black Widow, you know, maybe would have, that was a really good movie. It came out in the wrong decade, but it was really good for what it was. But like a movie like this is just, it's just too, there's too much going on and there's too many awesome characters that are not getting the time they deserve. And really, man, this, they could have like, just like, this could have been such a great Umbrella Academy in space. Like this could have been so good, you know?
Yeah, I think you're getting spoiled on shows, and
maybe are a different TV is so good right now. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like I don't know, because I just don't, I don't feel, I feel like I got a good idea of who all these characters were, with the exception of Makari. Makari was really the only one that I felt was underdeveloped, and that she was more there to be like, I have fast speed, I can beat up people, and we didn't really get very much from her. But I feel like everyone else had at least a moment where we got to see who they were. And what they represented, and you know, who, yeah, just who they were, right? And I feel like we got that for everybody, except perhaps Makari, and maybe Thena. Thena's more of a tragic character, and maybe that's what we're supposed to get from her, is that, you know, she's suffering from this thing where she remembers all the past worlds, and so So I would say Makari and Thena, we got the least of, but we did get stuff for Thena. And I still felt like I really got to know these characters. And I love the fact that they all had different opinions on how they should solve this problem that they came across. Like, and even amongst the two groups, the, you know, let it birth and then let's put it to sleep or whatever. Even within those two camps, there were different ideas on how to solve the problem. And that was just so cool to me, because you don't see that a lot in Marvel movies.
Yeah. No, that was great. That was really great.
Yeah. And so like that bit, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was fun. There were, you know, funny bits. There were some really emotional bits in there too. Like when Icarus, you know, has to kill Ajax, you know, and there were a couple different scenes in there, and that's Chloe Zhao, like, the way she directs those scenes, you know, I was kind of a little like dirt in this theater, man, you know, like, so I felt like I connected to those characters because I felt, you know, I had those moments in those scenes. And so, you know, I'm sorry that your black shriveled heart.
Oh, come on, man. I just like, it is because I think that there were those moments that made me want more. And maybe that was the goal, but I walked away dissatisfied, not wanting more in a good way, but kind of unsatisfied with what I got from these characters. Yes, those moments were shot really well, but I would actually argue to, I don't know if this is like the screenwriter or the director, but the choice to do so many time jumps, I think, like, undercuts a lot of those emotional moments where it's difficult to have an emotional through line when we do jump around so much. And I feel like this would have, well, like I said, I feel like this would have been better as a series or split up into like two or three movies, that we get a chance to meet these characters and know them. Or maybe this should have just been marketed not as like a 10 main character movie. Like, all of these characters are kind of given in kind of like a similar weight into the marketing, into what our expectations are. But really, Speedster Girl, Makari, like, great example. Like, basically, her role in this was akin to Quicksilver's in Days of Future Past, right? Like, they probably both had equal screen time and also, like, equally, like, some of the most epic moments in the fight.
Yeah.
Okay? So, but at the same time, you go back to Days of Future Past, like, Quicksilver really wasn't, like marketed as, like, a big component of the movie until after the movie came out, because that was, like, a big, you know, sequence in that, you know, in particular. Like, it wasn't his movie by any stretch of the imagination. But this, you know, movie is kind of being billed as kind of her movie, as equal to someone like, you know, like Cersei or like Icarus. And really, it's kind of their movie and everybody else is a supporting role. And so I think it's a little confused as to what it's trying to do. And it would have done what it's trying to do better, given more time, space, and yes, TV is really good right now. So we live in an era where there is, you know, we're a little spoiled, but it is what it is. Let me tell you about. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just on the comment about the time jumps, like, the time jumps to me felt like, you know, we would see a character aspect in present time, and then or you know, it would, you know, jump in the past, and we would see where that character aspect of the character came from, right? So like they were paired in a way where we would learn something about a character, and then in the past we would see where that came from, or vice versa. You know, I kind of liked how they did that. Yeah, you know, the jumping around can be kind of confusing, but to me it felt like those were explorations of an aspect of the character that we just witnessed, and or the basis of where, you know, that character is coming from. And so
I got that. I got that. Like, I understand what they were doing there. I just don't think it was effective.
Oh, I mean, it worked for me. That's all I'm trying to say, you know.
Like, yeah.
That's what it, that's okay. Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. And I get it. Like, I see where that motivation comes from. I see where this is, you know, yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. One last criticism to throw us into the, into the post-credits. We saw literally every single one of Jon Snow's scenes in the trailer. they you talk about marketing, like, oh, Jon Snow's in this movie. Like, no, he's really not, though. Like, he is not.
I don't even recall seeing him in the trailer.
Yeah, why weren't you involved in all of those other battles throughout human history?
That's and a like, pretty good Jon Snow.
Well,
I mean, it's a good impersonation of Jon of like someone impersonating
Jon Snow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but I mean, like we were, you know, the trailer kind of positions him as though he is going to be the human character through which we are going to experience the world of the Eternals. And that's not the case. He's there like quickly. And I will say, I loved how he was like, are you a witch? Cause like, that's cool. Like, that's the world that we live in right now. I'm just kind of anticipating. Oh, you're a space god, you know, or a sub-tier
space
god.
Space robot.
Yeah. Cool. That's fine. That's just the world we live in now. Like, I loved that. I thought that was great. That's the kind of stuff that I really appreciate. Cause if he was like, wait, what's going on? It's a little bit like, dude, come on, Thanos. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Look, I will say this, you know, maybe that's what you got, you know, that we were going to, you know, be the he was going to be the human hour, like the audience analog for these, you know, Eternals and whatnot. But I am very happy with who we did get for that role. And that was Karoon, Kingo's manager.
Okay. Yes. Except for the fact that he was kind of there, played more for laughs than to be our eyes. He showed up way too late to be the us in this. It was good that they had a human element with him being there. But he was kind of more of like a goofy sidekick, not like there as he was not brilliant. Kitty Pryde is my point. Like, we needed a Kitty Pryde in this movie and we didn't have one.
Maybe. I don't feel like we needed a Kitty
Pryde. Or a Jubilee, if you want to go with them.
I feel like we're all established MCU moviegoers and that we know what it is.
But this
like
is different. This universe. Is totally different.
Is it?
Yeah, it's totally different. It's robots from space. All right. Maybe it's not that different. But what is it? All right. These after the credit scene. So at the end, we get Star Fox showing up here.
I was very sad that Skippy wasn't there saying, do a barrel roll. Uh-huh.
Not that Star Fox. No, this is Star Fox. He was the Eternal of Titan, the brother of Thanos. He also has a poorly, a low budget CGI Seth Rogen rolling with him.
No, it's a Patton Oswalt.
Oh, was that who it was?
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's low budget CGI. One girl.
Yeah. That was kind of weird. Like, that sort of took me out. I was like, this looks like a cartoon character. Like, are we getting some weird, you know, spider pig moment here?
Yeah.
And then I realized that it wasn't a spider pig moment. And I was like, maybe the next movie he'll be a little bit better.
Well, I want to imagine if this is supposed to be a character, then they're going to have to put some more money into that.
But, I mean, it's a mid-credit scene. So like, you know,
workable, fine, a little bit, but that's the thing. There is an argument to be made with the mid-credit scene. Like, this is the last taste, the last flavor that you're going to walk out of this movie on. Maybe spend a little bit more time in the CGI or I don't know.
I'll tell you this. That was not the last flavor that we left the movie on. And it was completely because I don't know who the hell those characters are.
right.
and so I wasn't like because I sat there and I turned to Christy after that mid-credit scene and I was like, okay, that's great and all. I don't know who those people are, but who the hell's Jon Snow?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, but we got that. And that was the final flavor that I left with where I was like, okay, now I want to know. I want to know.
Black Knight. Right.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't, you know, Pip and Star Lord Fox, whatever. Sure.
He's kind of a jokey character. I mean, again, like I'm hoping the Eternals team up with the Guardians because we really need those connection points with the Celestials that we've seen before. We've been dealing with Celestials before. And I really
that's where they're going.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. I feel like Star Fox showing up seems like a tonal shift, that could be a good bridge there. And I would love to kind of have these characters like unify in more of a cosmic type.
They're going to fight Adam Warlock.
Maybe. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right. So yes, but the final. Now, did you recognize the voice?
The voice saying, "Are you ready yet?" or whatever.
Yeah.
No.
Do you know, do you know now who that was?
I know that Kit Harington is playing Black Knight, and that there's like a curse on the sword that he's carrying, and it's like his uncle who was evil, and he gave the sword to Kit Harington to like absolve him of his evil deeds.
Uh-huh. Do you know the voice of the person that was talking to him?
No.
My friend, that was Mahershala Ali, who is playing Blade.
Wait, what?
That is Blade talking to Black Knight. Yep.
So that was Blade off screen.
Yep.
I knew he was playing Blade.
Yep.
I knew Mahershala Ali was playing Blade.
That is Blade. I think what we just got set up for is some sort of Black Knight Blade crossover. Now, I guess, COVID. I don't know when all this was shot. So maybe he zoomed it in. But regardless, I wish he would have been on screen. That would have been awesome. But regardless, yeah, that was Blade, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Do they run it in the comics? Is that something that they?
I don't actually know. You know, Black Knight is not a character that I'm very familiar with. And what I know of Blade, I never read the Blade comics, but of course saw the movies. And then also he made frequent appearances on the Spider-Man cartoon, the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah.
But Black Knight, I've never, Black Knight kind of falls in that Eternals category for me. Not a character I'm particularly all that familiar with. And, I'm open. I'm willing. My enthusiasm for Phase 4 is not killed. We're about to go into the Spider-Verse in a big way. So, I'm still here for the MCU. But yeah, Black Knight, the Eternals, these are kind of characters that are like long shot, kind of gamble characters, you know?
Well, I will tell you this. I read some really interesting stuff about Black Knight last night and got me really sort of excited as to what they're going to do with him. One of the things was at one point in the comics, like something happens and Cap's like steps away from leading the Avengers and Black Knight takes up the role. So I'm like, okay, that could be interesting.
Hmm.
And then there's also some really interesting stuff with Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange and Black Knight have a bunch of run-ins because, it's sort of like a magic-based character. And then we got Doctor Strange, who's the Sorcerer Supreme. So will we see some Black Knight in No Way Home? I don't know. Probably not, because it's more Sony than it is.
Well, let's not get into spoilers for that. It'll be interesting to see. That's for sure.
Yes. I'm just saying that the Black Knight revelation, after reading about some stuff on that, because I had zero context on that character, kind of made me excited to see where they're going to go with that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I'm stoked to see as well. felt shoehorned in, all things considered, but that's fine. Like that's, we toss it up to cap it off later. That's the MCU way. And, I'm sure it'll be great. All right. Well, cool. Overall, man, what are you rating this out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 4.
Oh, I'm going to give it a 2.
A 2, really?
Yeah. Wow. Mostly because I gave Dune a higher rating, didn't I?
Yeah, I think you did.
I think because I was disappointed, because I didn't go into Dune, I didn't walk out of Dune disappointed. Like, I actually walked out of this movie disappointed. And
yeah, that's just bizarre to me.
Yeah, I really wanted to like it. And I felt like this could have been so much better in a series. Or with focus on a few of these characters, a handful of these characters are if they'd actually been in the movie, that would have been great. Instead of for 5 minutes, anyway, I feel like it was structured really, really poorly. And I had high hopes. And also I feel like it tried to do too much to kind of assert itself into the MCU without paying homage to what came before, given the fact there are so many connections.
See, I didn't feel like it felt forced in there. I thought it was perfect. Like, I liked just the amount that they had in there.
No, I mean, if the quintessential battle comes down to something that we saw happen in the first 10 minutes of a Guardians of the Galaxy movie by a bug, then I feel like it's like, okay, like,
it's how can you not tell that that's different?
I mean, I can, but it's also not. Like, I can tell that it's different, but you have to acknowledge that it's also not.
It is different. It's,
they're trying to put a celestial to sleep. You cannot tell me that that's not different. Come on, man. I will acknowledge that there are differences, but you have to acknowledge the similarities.
It's like this, okay? Dr. Yui in Dune gives...
Who?
Dr. Yui.
Okay, and he was?
He was the doctor who betrayed them to the Harkonnens.
Oh, and the Harkonnens are?
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding. All right, man, we got to wrap this thing up. All right, y'all, get tweet us your thoughts at TV Talk FM. We want to hear them. I know, like, it used to be that you were the negative one and I was the positive one, and we keep on switching hats, but I don't know. maybe I'll love Into the Spider Home and you'll...
No, because you're going to be like, oh, it'd be better as a series.
Everything would be better as a series right now. I don't know. Maybe season 7 of The Flash probably would have been better as a movie. Anyway, all right. That's going to do it for us for this week. Follow Bell at Ring That Bell. All our information and more can be found at tvtalk.fm. That's going to do it for this week. But until next time, we'll be back in a flash.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.